And we're back, as though by magic. And Andy's doing the slides for me this time, he says.
Well, allegedly, there you go.
Get people working for you, one of my rules for life. Okay, taking a look at silver light. It's a light that's silver. Can you do that? I have no idea. It's a marketing name. It's a very nice tool, though. It's a lovely place to write programs. This is the second of the sessions today, then there'll be a third, a fourth, a fifth, and a sixth, and a seventh, and then we all go down the pub and get very drunk indeed. Actually, no, we don't. That won't happen until tomorrow night. But moving on. So, questions out of the way. What we're going to get in this next hour is a look at Silverlight, a bit about Metro, components, how the applications fit together, the magical world of XAML, which is as magical as it sounds, a bit about layout and a bit about events with coverage of how to make the phone auto-magically handle orientation and things like that. Andy will then be following on with some expression blend stuff.
No.
Later on today, after the advanced
Silverlight. After the advanced Silverlight, yes. Yeah. I'll be following on with... I'll be building on Rob's session in the next hour where we're going to kind of... It's called advanced Silverlight, but it's more sort of essential other bits of Silverlight that you need to know in order to create a Silverlight-based app on Windows Phone.
And indeed. And has the slide just changed by magic? And if
it's
so...
backwards.
Not doing temporal time travel again, are we?
I'm afraid we are. There we go. I'm back in the right place.
I've had this sense of deja vu before. That was funny. I'm going to move on now. Okay, software and design. Yeah, sad fact. There are not many sad facts in this presentation. Quite a few sad people, but... we'll gloss over that. Programmers aren't always good at design. I am rubbish at design, but I'm smart enough to know that it's best to get somebody else to do it and keep it simple and use the defaults, a kind of how I live.
I don't know if it is a sad fact. I mean, in actual fact, you think about it, it is a different skill set. If you've got a very sort of artistic, creative mind, you're quite often not quite so good at, like, hard-nosed logical thinking, if you like. That's
and
not meant to be a
versa.
Criticism of people, because people have different things to bring to the party. And the phone system is very good at embracing both designer skills and programming skills.
Yeah, I think one of the things that also is rather nice is the templates and the custom and the pre-built controls mean that you can make an application that looks okay very easily. You're not going to have anything like hot dog stand colour schemes available without a lot of work to get them. So if you go with what's there, you'll end up with a thing that looked quite nice. It's nice, though, to have, in terms of the development environment, some service paid to this idea that we want to have people that are designing, people that are programming, and allow them to actually excel in their fields and then come together to make a nice app. And that's what Phone makes possible, that's what Silverlight makes possible, and we'll come across how that happens a bit later. The phone has its own design style, which they've called Metro. This is very carefully thought through in terms of how they're going to make it work. And I think it'll be appearing on Windows 8 in some form as well, but that's a different kettle of fish. Some of the demos I've seen look a bit like the phone. But your programs should reflect this style.
Are you going to say why it's called Metro? Can I say why it's called Metro?
You can say why it's called Metro.
It's called Metro because it's inspired by the clear signage you tend to see in metropolitan areas. So, you can go to any major city in the world and you'll see a sign for subways and that sort of thing. And you will tend to know what it's saying to you, even though you may not share the language of that country. Because it's very clear and commonly accepted patterns of signage. So that's really what inspires Metro on the phone as well. It's meant to be very intuitive and very clear and easy to use and easy to understand.
This isn't a thing which is showing off how clever the developer is. It's showing off how easy this thing is to understand. Yes, absolutely. I like that. Silverlight and Metro on the phone have been melded together. The default appearance of the controls and the fonts and all that kind of stuff all match the style. There is quite a useful web page you can go to which gives you design guidelines for the Metro experience. So if you're looking at how best to structure an application, how best to make things appear, if you want a good thing to point your designers at, that link on that page is a good one to take a look at, because that kind of sets out what Andy's saying, the philosophy, the idea of making it clear to understand. No Chrome, nothing which detracts from the message we're giving you. Is that a fair comment?
That's a fair comment.
Jolly good. Okay.
That's not to say, I mean, actually, as you will see as we create apps, the kind of default style of apps tends to be rather black and white. This is why, you know, you need to embrace the designer skills as well, because although black and white is as clear as it gets, it's perhaps not terribly exciting a lot of the time. So getting some nice sort of user interaction features and some good graphics in a subtle sort of way is a good idea for getting your apps to be the popular ones that people will buy. In the next session, I'll be talking a little bit about some of the animations and things that you can work into your applications to give them a bit more life and that sort of thing. So that's coming up.
But it all works very nicely together. In terms of graphical design, this is a screenshot of Expression Blend, which Andy will be covering later on today, which shows you the really fine levels of control that people who know how to do this stuff can actually exert on the applications they make. And then they can take this and drop it into the Visual Studio application build process to make a thing which looks that good. And so we'll be covering that. This is basically the tool that you want to do your UDI. And UDI? IDE? No, yes.
UI.
UI. I'm getting there. It's been a long day already. And this is Visual Studio, which we all know and love as the place to actually make the code and make it fly. You can design your application entirely in Studio, although some things will be hard to do. You can't do any animation of control behaviours in Studio very easily, whereas Expression Blend is great for that.
Yeah, in fact, in the fourth session, I'll be switching backwards and forwards between Studio and Blend to give you an idea of how the tools work together and complement each other.
Okay. So here we go. Let's start off in terms of how Silverlight actually fits together. But there's one kind of important bullet point on this side at the bottom, which is you should be very careful about the fact that you're targeting a phone device as opposed to something else. If you're moving into phone development because you've done desktop, that's great. It's a good trajectory. You've got all the programming skills that you need. But do remember that when you make a phone app, the way the application works, a little example, if you put the button that does things at the bottom of the screen, when the keypad's being displayed, that button might not be visible in a useful way. So you have to be a little bit careful about how the user interface works when making a phone app. This isn't a Windows Phone-specific issue. It works across all the platforms. And it's something which, if you pay attention to that point at the design stage, a lot of pain further down the tracks goes away. So do keep that one in mind. Like it says, the middle one, users expect a very nice look and feel. They expect things to be smooth and shiny, because that's how devices are these days, and you have to play to that as well. So I'm going to start with the Silverlight Designer in Visual Studio, and I'm going to make a user interface that works properly in terms of the Metro principles. If you want to get designers on board and part of your team, they add an awful lot of value, and you can sit down with them and show them how it all fits together, and away you go. So we're going to look in terms of actually how we're going to use Silverlight from within Studio. And we're going to start off with the project template that makes a standard Silverlight app with a single page. Multiple pages, you can add those later, and we'll be doing this in some of the demos that you'll see later on. So we make ourselves a nice Silverlight app, and away we go. If you have a particular design style that you want to go for, there are templates for those as well. There's a thing which is called a pivot app, which is a series of pages you can pan between. The user can flick between these. And if you've ever used the eBay application on Windows Phone, that's a free download and a very good example of how Pivot works. There are also a type called Panorama, where you have a single large background and controls you can slide across it, like a panoramic view of the app. And there's one of the cinema applications has a Panorama app that does that. And in fact, I think the eBay app uses both, because you can pan across a picture of an auction running. Get it and play with it. It's worth spending a few minutes. If you want to make an app of that particular type, there are templates for you to do that as well. These are just different types you create when you build your very first project. If you're doing that, you're making a design decision, really, that you're not going to have more than one page. You're going to have one big thing, I think it's fair to say. But give some thought to this. Work it out, storyboard it, play with it, show it to people, and then go ahead and start making the code. It's a good idea to do this. And here are some pictures of what the three templates look like. On the left, you can see the standard application that we've already seen made. The middle one, we have a first page, which I can flick to show a second page and a third page. And the templates are nice because you can just populate these particular parts of the template with your item and delete the ones you don't need and change the names, and everything then just hangs together. And the final one on the right-hand side, that blue background is a large, wide image which you can pan across as different things move into the field of view. Be a little bit careful about these, because if you put text entry components into them, that can actually make the layouts a bit confusing to use. And take a look at the style guidelines for information on the best way to use these application types. But they're really good starting points, and they make it make good sense to sort of play with these for a while. Spend a couple of evenings making some templates and just fiddling with them and seeing which one looks best and which one feels best. And that's not a bad way to travel. Okay, so keeping on moving forward. That's a template we've already seen and we love to bits. And this is the adding machine that we've already seen and we also love to bits. I'm using a fixed version now, which adds two numbers and gets the answer correct. And what I want to do for the next 10-15 minutes is look at how you can take this and make it into what I will call a proper, well-behaved Silverlight app. And you'll take this trajectory when you make your first Silverlight program and get it into a state where the users can actually get it from Marketplace. So there are a few things that we're going to take a look at to do with actually taking the template, putting your behaviours in, and then making it into something which is worth having. So that's where we're going with this. If you've actually used object-oriented programming, if you've used Windows Forms, if you've used the Java libraries, you'll be used to the idea of software objects that represent things on the screen which do stuff. And Silverlight is just the same in terms of how it works. So if you're coming at this from a different programming environment, if you've not used C# or Silverlight before, there's nothing magical here. It's all good stuff. Each of the things you can see is a graphical rendering of a software object the system's maintaining to keep the UI going. This is how UIs work, and these are all the things you can see. We have a title for the application, a title for the page, and then we have a text box for the first number, a text block for the plus character, and then so on down the screen. About how we have a button which you can press to make things happen, and a text box at the bottom for the result. And these are the building blocks your application will be made of. And these are called Silverlight display elements. And the name of the game here is really put those elements on the screen in the right place and give them sensible names and behaviours that let the user actually do stuff with them. And that's effectively what we'll be doing. We've got properties which these things expose that tell the Silverlight environment where to put the items on the screen. And if our program changes those values, then the element is changed to keep up. So this is standard stuff. So the name of the game is twiddling with these things. To display the number, I just change the text property in the result box to the value I want the user to see, and then bingo, it all appears. Now this I'm showing at the moment is kind of a sort of hard-coded programming ways. As Andy will show you later, there are some very nice things you can do to bind the properties of these things to data directly, and so you have changes in data reflected auto-magically in the display elements. That's for later. That's great stuff. And that's well worth turning up for. But for now, I'm going to show you how these things work by doing it, if you like, the hard way, which the user doesn't care. Users don't care. It's really sad. We know all this brilliant design stuff and these fantastic objects, and the user just goes, oh, that's nice, or oh, that works. And the conversation stops at that point. Build the one that you like the best. Build the one that works best for you. And this is a bit of the Silverlight class hierarchy, and it's just to underline the point that what we have here is a bunch of objects which you can regard as lumps of software. You can make your own custom components, which have got particular behaviours and properties, and extend the ones on the tree to do that.
So it's also worth mentioning that in that tree hierarchy, you can see there this elements like text block, text box, and button. When you drag them onto the screen to build your first applications, they have a certain appearance, but you're definitely not stuck with that. And as I'll be showing in the fourth session today, you can customize the appearance of these controls almost endlessly.
Yeah, it's all open, it's all up for grabs, and it's all very easy to change. And it all starts from a common base, which Silverlight expresses the design of in the language called XML, of XAML, sorry, which more in a moment. We've got three different kinds of components in my adding machine: a text box, which takes input, a text block that shows me things, and a button that is used to generate events. And that's it. There are other controls, there's a map controls, all kinds of really rich, interesting controls you can use as well. But these are basically the bread and butter fundamentals that you can use. If you're going to learn Silverlight, you have to learn some XAML. Sad but true. XAML is actually wonderful. It's a declarative language. It's a markup language that says, I want this and I want it here. And so the XAML is built for you, or you can write your own, or you can mix and match and fiddle between them. And I find this fantastically useful because it means that once you know a bit of XAML, you don't have to drag things around and plonk them on the screen. You can just create them in text form. And it's a lovely shorthand for building user interfaces very, very quickly. But this is effectively the central point from which the information comes that makes Silverlight do its stuff. So I have a text box, and that text box is left aligned. It has a particular margin, blah, blah, blah. It has a name, first number text box, and the text in it is centralized. I have a button. The button is called equals button, and it's got a behavior that fires when it's clicked. And this is how you write your stuff. So,
well, although it's worth saying that you generally would not, you might, as a developer, you come in and you'll modify the XAML once you understand how it hangs together. But in most cases, particularly when you're starting out, you're going to be using the visual designers.
Yep.
So you're dragging elements on and you're working in the properties window. But the effect of all of that is actually all that's happening underneath the wrappers is it's updating
these
the XAML.
Numbers are changing. Yep.
Yeah, what you see on a Silverlight app is XAML. It's the visual representation of this XAML that you can see here.
Yeah, thank you. That's a good point. I like to make it clear that there is no magic.
Yep.
This is how, I mean, in Forms apps, you have this resource, mysterious resource file that does stuff. Mm. In XAML, in Silverlight, it's all up front. That's my grid that's got my things in it. That's my text box. That's my button. If I have lots of text boxes and buttons, then so be it. I just increase them and put them all inside this particular container. And that's my reference to the method that will get run when the button is clicked. And so that means that there pretty much better be a method in my program somewhere called equals button underscore click. Otherwise, bad karma. It's not going to end well.
And we've had a question from Kang Su, says a good question. Can I instantiate XAML objects in code in C#? Absolutely, yeah,
absolutely.
You can. It's so this is a declarative format. So what we're seeing here is we've got a grid that has the name content panel, and this already has a couple of children defined here, text box and button. So in your code, you could create an instance of another button and add it to the children collection of the grid called content panel. Absolutely, you can do that. And there's certain occasions when that would be the right thing to do.
You can actually build the interface on the fly to suit the data you've got coming in.
Yep.
And that works extremely well. It's a good way to boost performance in some situations as well, to actually make the things on the fly. Nothing is wasted in that way. There's my event handler. You've seen it before. I've actually fixed it now. So I read the first number and then the second number, put them in the right places, and then I set the text box to the result. And this is effectively the business logic of my adding machine, all sitting inside the event handler for the equals button. And that's how it all fits together. And I can show you all this in its wonder on my desktop, because I actually have a working adding machine. And let's go dig it out. And like I have said, and I'll keep on saying until someone drags me away with a big stick or hook or something, all this stuff is going to be out there. You're going to be able to get hold of all this content. We'll give you the link later on today. Keep watching the skies. I once read that as keep watching the skis, which is very strange and not at all funny. So we'll just fire this. Well, if we just open up the design surface, then we can take a look at how my program works. Now, the initial page, in fact, the only page of a brand new shiny Silverlight application is called mainpage.xaml. You can just see it on the right-hand side in the Solution Explorer. And if you look at the design pane now, you've got effectively three areas. You have your design surface, you have your XAML, and then you have the Solution Explorer and the properties windows that you might actually know and love from previous versions of Studio. And I can modify the items on my screen any of those ways. If I grab hold of the equals button and I slide it down the screen a bit, You may have to watch this carefully. The model will happen now is it will move, and the actual margin information for the button will change. I'll do that again. At the moment it's 113. If I move it to there, it'll now change to a different number. So my it's now 158. So I can move things around using the graphical editor, or I can change numbers in here. If I make the left-hand margin of my button 0, then the button suddenly jumps to the left. And if I make it whatever number I like, then I can place it whatever. So changing the XAML changes the components, make it 100. I'm quite enjoying this. 1,000's a bit big. Make it 100 and pow, it now moves in a bit. Or I can grab hold of this here and just slide it about. And now if we go back and look at the number, we'll find that it's actually now 187. I can also, if I want, go into the properties window down here, and I can start looking at the layout elements and changing those too. So there's three different ways you can set things up. Do the one that works, we don't care. Hide the XAML window and drag everything onto the screen and move it around. We don't really mind. It all just hangs together. If you're used to Windows forms and you get components bound to event handlers by double-clicking on them, then if you double-click on the equals button, you'll be pleased to notice that actually, yes, it takes me straight to the click event for that. This is fantastic. Little pro tip from Rob.
All right.
Rename the component to something sensible like equals button before you put the event handler on.
Yeah.
Otherwise, that would be called button one click,
yeah,
which is much harder to understand. So put the components on, give it a sensible name, and then whack on the event handlers. I mean, you can go and change them, because if I look in the XAML, then if I just slide across a bit, there's my name for the button, and there's my name for the event handler. There it is. So you can go in and change it by hand, should you wish to do that. But get it right first time. Works better, as far as I'm concerned. And so you can, if we wanted to add another element to this pane, just go in here, find a nice component, maybe another text block, drag it onto the screen and drop it.
So incidentally, there was another question. Why is there no label control in Silverlight?
Well, it's
called a text block.
It's called a text block. it's what's in the name,
yeah.
I think. I get text block and text box mixed up. But the block is the thing which is just a lump of text, and the box is the one you can type in.
Yep.
You can put things in a box, would be a good way to remember this, I guess. But, yeah, label equals text block. There's a pretty much direct mapping there. You can manage them by properties, as you might expect. And again, if you're used to Visual Studio on other device platforms, there's also an events management. So if I go into the equals button properties and look at the events here, I'll find that actually be another expression of how the equals button is bound to the click event. So it all hangs together extremely well, and it's extremely flexible, and you can basically do it any way you fancy. Whichever works best for you. I tend to drag the components on from the toolbox and then fiddle with them in XAML. If I want something a bit similar to something else, I will use the evil, that is, block copy and make a whole bunch of new components and away you go from there. So it's really a question of how you want to do it. But it's start with the design service, as Andy said, and then move into XAML as your confidence grows, you'll be fine.
It's worth pointing out, perhaps, at this stage, as you can see, there's a number of visual controls on the adding machine there, and they're all sitting there within this grid. So there also is this five or six different layout control, container controls.
Oh, yes.
That don't actually have a visual representation, but their job is simply to arrange other controls within
them. We'll be playing with those later.
Okay.
You're quite right. It's a very, very powerful feature, because it means that you can get the display to lay itself out.
Yep.
Or for the containers to take over the positioning. And this is great in two situations. One is where the orientation of the phone changes, which is how we're going to use it, but it also means that you can have things that lay out components you've bound data to. And that's wonderful. Oh, should I get this excited by software? I think I should. So we'll keep on moving. But it is rather nice. Here's the keyboard. Like I said in my UI spiel, if you run this program at the moment, if you get the keyboard up, then pressing the equals button is going to be hard to do because it's behind the thing. And so to get it to properly usable, maybe I should twiddle with my design and scrunch it up a bit so the equals button is always visible even when the bottom text box is having things typed into it. And so like I said, prototype, play with it, show it to people. Remember that the phone audience contains people that have got phones with keyboards and phones with no keyboards. Either is perfectly acceptable and your application must work with both. And so do give some thought to sort of not hiding things under the keyboard so the user doesn't know how to press them to get to the next thing. That's how you build user satisfaction and get your happy endings and your big bucks. If you turn the phone on its side, running my wonderful adding machine at the moment, you get that, which is less than impressive. Yeah. Don't have a cow man about this.
Don't have a what?
Don't have a cow. It's a sort of, I'm trying to get down with the youth culture here and make a Simpsons reference. What with Simpsons being about 20 years old. So, but if you don't want to support landscape and portrait, don't bother.
No.
The actual phone itself, if you tip it at the start menu, will not react to that. Nobody makes a mobile phone where the home screen tips over. Not even the iDevice or the Android do this. So if you want to work in always portrait or always landscape, make that design decision, stick with it. If you want to show off or you have a need for this, you're putting the thing in a car, it has to go that way, or they take it out and use it that way, fine. You can handle this in the actual phone, but by default, make a brand new Silverlight app. It will be portrait mode and it'll be fixed to that. So if you tip the phone, nothing will happen. It'll just make you do that to use it. The XML that describes the application has a setting called supported orientations. And to actually make the phone application able to support more than one orientation, you just tell it. You just say, OK, portrait or landscape is fine by me. And at this point, the program will now attempt to redraw the screen on its side when you tip it. And you can go further than this in that your code can actually bind to an event that fires when the phone is tipped. If you play with a Windows phone, which is a fantastic UI, it's very nice, sometimes you tip the phone and the screen swivels, and it's a lovely effect. You could do that in your program by catching this I've been tipped event and then running your own animation behavior to make the phone screen spin round.
In fact, if you go to my blog at mobileworld.appamundi.com, I've got a post on there from last year, a few months back, that talks about animations that you can play when your app is switching orientation. So good tips on there on getting a really nice, fluid UI experience when that happens.
Because the users will expect it. We're going to make the adding machine deal with this, but we're actually going to do it in a very bang mode, so that it'll go, which is... It jars, actually. It's the kind of thing which will stop your app from being great. It'll be good, but not great. This is one of the containers that Andy was talking about. It's called a stack panel, and if you look at the screen, you'll find that it contains a whole bunch of text boxes and buttons in the order I want them displayed. So I've got my first number, my plus character, my second number, my button, my answer, all lined up in the stack panel. And stack panels are lovely because they just stack stuff. Okay, so...
The default orientation is vertical.
It's vertical, yes. Yeah.
But you can explicitly set it to horizontal and have things stacked across the page rather than straight down it.
Yes, and you can put stack panels inside stack panels, so you can have a row of things that are arranged across. And we'll be doing that as well, which is quite nice. But the nice thing about this is that I don't have to do any of that moving around to figure out where things are now, because the stack panel will take my objects and bang, it'll just lay them out for me. So the design gets simpler, and it means that when orientation changes, the stack panel relays the controls out, and it all comes out in the wash. And I can show you that. Not the washing bit, but the other bit. If we just drift into the second demo, I got a laugh from the guy. That wasn't a laugh; that was a snigger. Okay, I'll go for snigger. So snigger's the best I've had all day. So I'll get rid of that one, and I'll go back and find my orientation adding machine. Again, you get the code; it's all in there. And so all I've done here is I've gone into the information that tells the system about my application, which is. We'll be going into this in more detail a little bit later. But if I go into my XAML here, and basically, if you look at the bit I'm highlighting now, I'm telling the phone system, You can use this application in portrait or landscape, and I want you to start off in portrait, please. And the system will do that. If you want to make it landscape first, you know how to do that. IntelliSense works on XAML. So if you start typing something, the system will suggest things that might work in there. So if I go into here and decide to re-enter that, if I hit my double quote, then IntelliSense drops down. These are all the things you could type here, Rob. So I can go portrait or landscape, and it will then just drop that in for me as though by magic. So IntelliSense is your friend big time in XAML. It's very, very useful. And so now I've told the system, OK, you can handle both things. If we scroll a bit further down, we can see that we've actually got my little stack panel doing the business. And if I fire this up, I can tip the emulator, and it will all just hang together. In we go. There's my adding machine. If I grab hold of the emulator and flip it, then the adding machine lines up. Because I put these objects in the center of the screen, they all align themselves nicely, and it looks wonderful. And I can hear the sound of clapping in the distance. So I'm definitely, or even maybe even closer than that. Yeah. So it's all good. It all works. The code's all there. All I did was say, yes, you can tip this. And then I use some auto-align mechanisms. There are clever things you can do with changing the display elements by hand, should you wish to do that. Fired on that event, either of these things will work. It's all good.
So sort of related, we've got a question here from Marcus saying, when are objects defined in XAML actually instantiated? So XAML is a declarative way of defining your object tree. And the answer to that is when you navigate to the page, it's the very first phase of that page being built up is the object tree being built.
Yes. If you go into the...
In fact, there's a loaded event, which yep. When are you about to show us?
It's in the constructor for the page. There's a method called initialize component. If you right-click on that and say go to definition, which I'm doing now, then, hey, wow, you can see a whole bunch of this dot blah, blah, blahs, which are the constructions of my various elements.
Yeah.
And that's built. Don't change this, because if you do, you'll break your app. This is built for you from the XAML.
This is the tool-generated code that Visual Studio is building in the background for you that links your C# code to the XAML that you've created in the designer or by hand.
So the answer is, well, as far as we're concerned, by magic pixies, really.
Indeed.
It does happen, and I like people to understand exactly how it all works, and that's a really nice question. Thank you very much for that. And the fact I would answer it is even nicer. Yes, okay. If I could sing a song about it, that would be even more impressive, but you wouldn't want to hear that. So we'll keep on going. And Mango intro Silverlight, here we go. Going back to the slides. And so we've seen orientation being handled rather well, I thought. And so we can keep on going. At the moment, we have no error handling. If someone types in one, O-N-E, and one of the things about errors in programs that drives me nutso is that if someone crashes your program, they look clever and you look stupid. And I hate this. If a non-programmer, a knuckle-dragging type, crashes your program, they look clever and you look an idiot. And so I try and avoid this happening as much as possible. Someone types O-N-E and presses equals. That parse that says, take this string and make it into a number, will go, me no likey, and throw an exception. And there'll be an enormous clunk and your program will, at that point, tip over and not do the right thing. I hate that. If you want to fix it, well, in C# terms, I can catch my exception. In Visual Studio terms and in Windows Phone terms, I can then use a message box to show a message to the user which says invalid number. And what you will see is exactly that. And you can see it in the graphic. We'll do it in a minute. A message will pop up and the user can then clear that to move on. And so if you're wondering how I can pop messages up to the user about this, that, and the other, there's a message box, and you can also ask questions. So you can say OK or abort and read the answer that comes back. This one just displays the message invalid number and then moves on. So we do have ways in which we can pop messages up. But a better way to solve the problem, really, is to actually make it... The best way to stop errors from happening is to make them harder to do. And so rather than having an option where they can type text, we can just say to Windows Phone, don't display any letters because I happen to know this is the place where numbers are typed in. And we can set the input scope of the text box to number, and that means that what you see on the screen is what they get, so that they can just type in numbers and nothing else. They can still break your program, by typing in nothing at all. If they give you an empty string, that'll mm-hmm. still cause it to fall over. But they can't type in non-numbers now, which is good.
Great.
So that's, again, another tip, and it's what my code does. And I'll just show you this, and then we can go on to the fun-packed questions. And then I get a rest while my mate Andy takes over. Yes, that'll be nice. So if I go on to the next one, and again, you're getting all this code. We are just so good, aren't we?
Yeah.
We are just such giving people.
Mm. Yeah.
And we'll leave that point hanging in the air. If I bring up, if I get the program going, then we should see one or two rather nice things happening at this point. Another reason for worrying about text and things is that if I'm, yeah, my orientation, that's all just working. If I type in there, and I get my numeric keypad. Of course, if I press page down,
Page up,
I apologise. Then, oh, okay. I'll just flip you back where you were. I can now use the text keyboard as well. But it won't let me put numbers in, which is rather nice of it. So I'll press that again. I'm confusing myself. I've done this many times. But the idea is if I type in, if I now go in here and type in 23, okay, that's okay. If we go equals, okay. If I go in here and put in nothing at all and press equals, and I get my invalid number pop up. Now, I've turned the sound off on this machine because otherwise it all loops around and doesn't work too well. But you would hear the bingle, bingle little noise at that point. The user can then cancel the message and go on. We can show you the code actually doing all this good stuff, because if I drop into here, I can use the wonderfulness that is Visual Studio, and I can actually put a breakpoint on that message box.show while the program's running, and just press equals again, bang, and we hit the message box display.
We've an interesting question here from Mike. It says, does the input scope affect the user's ability to paste? So there is this is not a Mango feature. This was actually
it's a pearler of a question.
It's a great question, because what you have to realise is that the input scope is about helping your users to use your app. So you're putting the appropriate keyboard up to sort of prompt them into entering the right kind of data. But you're dead right. If you use the paste feature and you happen to have Tech Alpha in there, that's another way of breaking it. So again, you have to code for that eventuality as a developer. Just remember that everything you think your users will do, they'll always come up with a few more that you hadn't thought about. So,
if you're not sure what we mean by paste buffer, the paste buffer is basically a way in which in the phone you can capture a lump of text from one part of the system and use it somewhere else. So I can take a phone number off a web page and then paste it into the contact details of a person that I'm creating on the phone. Yes. I wish to do that. And so the paste buffer is used for this kind of thing. But it's a really good question, that.
Yeah. And also, Charles here has pointed out that you can break your app by typing more than one decimal place. Let me just clarify here. This is not production quality code. Yes, you're dead right. Again, that's right. Another one that you as a conscientious developer will have to handle, so.
Always catch exceptions and always do something sensible with them, except when you want somebody else to deal with it instead. It's Robert's philosophy in a nutshell. But that's a really good point. Yes, 15 decimal points would not play well with PARS.
No.
This is why we do this job. It's great. am I going to go back to? And I think banging the table like that really causes the sound to go all over the place.
They're throwing their arms up around in the background.
Everybody's speakers have now shot through the wall and what have you. I do apologise, and I'll try not to get quite so excited next time. So there you go. So we've had a very, very quick look at the wonders of Silverlight and XAML. The key thing here is to play around with it. Don't worry. Just do the one that works for you and use the tools as appropriate. You've got a way in which you can deal with phones being tipped. You've got a way in which you can put up messages which the user can then react to. You have an almost working adding machine. If we go into App Store tomorrow, Marketplace tomorrow, and find 15 adding machines for sale, then good on you. I'll award a prize to the one we can't break. We'll try two decimal places and see exactly what happens. So that's the review, yes. You express the design in text, but you don't have to use that text. You can use the design surface to do that. You can build the elements on the fly, and they are all objects.
I'm actually going to throw in a little instructional point at this point, because we had a couple of questions. We mentioned the initialized component thing, and we had a couple of questions from people saying, oh, I didn't quite get that. Can you explain it? So just so you understand in terms of events, when the Silverlight runtime engine parses your XAML and generates all the objects, when it has completed that operation and all your objects have been built in memory and are ready for display, it fires the page loaded event. So if you generally don't want to put any of your logic that's interacting with UI controls in your C-sharp, in your code behind file, don't put it in the constructor. Nope. You want to wait until you've had the loaded event fired. And that's when all the XAML has been instantiated, has been parsed, and it's kind of your code. You're ready to go with your application logic. So.
Yeah, and if you're writing a forms app, people do put things in constructors. But if you're writing a
slightly
phone
dodgy
app,
yeah.
Your best place to put it is when you know the phone. There's on navigated two is another good place as well.
We will be coming to all of that.
But Andy's got all that covered. But that's it in terms of the this slot. We're back in about 10 minutes' time with. Uncle Andy's amazing Advanced Silverlight show, which just basically takes us on to the next level.
Going to build on top of what Rob has taught you there, and we're going to be looking at navigation, data binding, application bar, kind of the essentials that you need to know in Silverlight app development, and that's coming up very shortly.
And there's a really good joke in the review questions as well.
There is?
Absolutely. See you later.
Okay.